Well, good morning. Today I have got Alex and Tyler joining me. Now, a little intro to Alex and Tyler. Mate, I have referred to these two as a creative powerhouse. These two are co-owners of a business here in Brisbane called Vector Etch, and it's a business that specializes in laser cutting for jewelry makers and designers. Now, Alex also creates brooches, earrings, and other jewelry, and has also gone on to create Laser Design School to help teach the next generation of makers how it's done. Now, the two of them also run a lot of other events together. They've got another brand called The Monday. They are madly into specialty coffee and brewing. You're not going to get a Blend 43 when you come and see these guys, let me assure you. Tyler, I actually met when he was previously an art director in agency land. Now, we'll certainly be talking about this. He finds himself in an indie band called Dad's Fastest Swimmers. The man is hard into film photography. And I'm all about his questionable automotive choices. So, guys, welcome. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having us.
With me this morning. What I'm looking to do today is find out a little bit about how you two became the owners of Vector Etch, how you got into, because I mean, it's a very specialized business. Before we sort of go back in time, would you like to share with me a little bit about Vector Etch and what it does?
Yeah, definitely. So Vector Etch started to produce jewelry for visual artists and people who wanted to take what they paint on the walls into art forms that are wearable. So when it was started by Andrew Holloway, it was to, do that for makers and artists who would go to supernovas, Comic-Cons, that type of thing, and then be able to produce that. And the laser cutting, really, you can do anything with. And he always specialized in the jewelry side of things, which, you know, pick a niche, stick to it, and that's what happened. Yeah,
it's worked out really well with that.
It has. And for people that don't really understand laser cutting, could you explain to me the process? Like how do you even start?
Yeah. So when you are taking illustrations that you generally have pen to paper, you convert that into design software, you tell the laser cutter where you want all the cut lines, so it's little plot points and a line, and that will tell the laser cutter where to cut. And then you also have engraving, which is another big part of it, and which is taking a little bit off the surface of the acrylic or the wood. And then you can paint it, you can add your own touch to it. And laser cutting just plots points, cuts them out. Pretty simple, yeah.
Now, your core sort of product is with acrylics. Again, for people that have, never dabbled in laser cut acrylics, do you want to explain a bit about the material for us as well and why that's such a good thing to work with?
Yeah, absolutely. With laser cutters, you can laser cut all sorts of materials. There are ones that cut metal, there are ones that just focus on timber, and we focus mainly on acrylic, and pretty much we keep our own stock of that in-house. We've got about 400 different colors or varieties. Most of them are 3 mil thick, so we keep to that consistency of the 3 mil acrylic, and we also have maybe 50 or 60 different types of timbers as well, and those are a similar thickness as well, so most of those translate really well to the jewelry or the art projects, even some of the stuff with, architecture mock-ups and that sort of thing as well. So basically it's, it's made by large manufacturers and then we cut it down into 600 by 300 sheets. That way we can keep it on our shelves really easily, stack them all up, know what we've got in stock. And then by working with our own materials as well, we know the consistency of them. We know the settings that we need for the laser. that's something that we adjust weekly as well, sometimes daily, to make sure that it's cutting at its optimal level. And it's something that we take a lot of pride in with our service, is the consistency and the quality, and of course the customer service. Whereas I do find with a lot of other laser cutting businesses, they focus on a lot of the bigger stuff like signage and that sort of thing, which is really awesome and really important. But it's hard to find the more delicate side of laser cutting that we focus on.
See, the delicate side, I think that sort of, but I think that explains well what it is that you guys do. And with the materials, having done a tour of your workshop, the thing I couldn't get over was the range of colors. Like, it is a literal rainbow of acrylics.
It genuinely is.
But then also sparkles.
Yeah.
Like, mate, you've got all the glitter ones, and I'm like walking through there going, ooh.
We actually, we call ourselves glitter dealers.
There you go, glitter dealers.
Rather than just laser cutters, we're glitter dealers.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, see, at least we understand what you do now, but again, you don't just wake up and start a laser cutting business where you specialize in jewelry.
Definitely
and,
not.
And delicately understand the fine art of laser balance. Alex, I'd like to start with you. Mate, take me back. As young Alex, like as a kid, did you find yourself an artisan? Were you making and creating?
I was always making. I was always painting. I was always finding things around the house and trying to make them into something cooler than they were. And I used to study the Tamilwood home catalogs. I really wanted to be an architect. And at the age of 7, I designed my family home. And my parents never built it because they were like, this is ridiculous. You can't have 3 playrooms.
And a slide.
Yeah, and a slide. But, you know, I designed it.
Maybe we'll do it one day.
I was going to say, you're ahead of your time. Yeah, like, you know, before Google did it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've always been, you know, making things or drawing things and, yeah, always wanted to be an architect or an accountant. So, and an accountant that would be quite creative and present financial solutions in a, you know, fun, creative way.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever explained my accountant as an exciting creator. They're a little bit more straight down the line, which I guess is part of why I enjoy that part of what they do.
Yeah.
Was this something that, you know, you were able to delve into at school? Was it something that was supported?
Yeah, I think it was. And I lived next door to my grandma, which was great. And she's a costume designer and artist. And so that was always really good hands-on, getting to learn everything. And then I would just take the projects to school. So every show and tell, I would just bring something I've made. And that was very fun. So, yeah, it was supported all the way through school, especially with my parents and my grandparents. And then the teachers loved it because they always got something really quirky to come in for show and tell. So they always learned something.
I do have to say, though, Alex has a very special superpower of just doing whatever she wants. And, you know, moving forward with that and not taking on too much external criticism or, you know, trying to knock her off that path. So I think that's really important. And a lot of kids, you know, it can be hard to grow up being creative and trying to follow that without getting sort of, you know, pushed into the typical ways of doing things.
Yeah, a bit of a shove in the direction that you don't really approve of.
Yeah.
Now, I've got to just jump back here a little bit. So costume designer and artist, what sort of costumes and for what purpose?
She would do the most for theatre performances. My uncle ran the Ipswich Little Theatre as well as Artslink Queensland. So they did theatre performances around schools all around Queensland. And fun fact, used to live with Russell Crowe. So, yeah, you know, he was very much in the theatre world. And so she was his sidekick and would create all the costumes.
Well, that's an unexpected turn.
Yeah.
Before Russell found his significant notoriety, or in the early days of that?
In the early mid notoriety, yeah.
There you go. That's a cracking story. Do you still exchange Christmas cards?
Not with Russell. With Jeffrey Rush, we previously did. Yeah. So, mate. Just a little name drop.
How good's the theatre world?
Yeah, it actually is pretty exciting. I'd love to be more involved, but I've feel like I've never quite had that connection other than hearing some stories from Alex.
That's wild. Well, there you go. I've fallen off track there. I didn't expect all the
It all contributes.
But it does. And the thing I always love about this is it paints a picture of the person that you become. And those sort of influences, you know, somebody like your grandmother who is, you know, heavily embedded in this sort of stuff, you know, that helps to really shape some of those formative years where I guess you were given access to these things and encouraged, and you would have seen, you know, the outcome, because you would have seen, you know, the costume going from a concept into execution and then actually being used in live performance. And it's lovely to see that. You know, that's not an experience that, you know, a lot of people get, where, you know, the system is basically, I feel, designed to beat any creativity out of you and turn you into a good factory worker that, you know, is just designed to shut up and do what you're told.
Very true.
Yeah, I felt definitely that it's like for you just been constantly, you know, you're bound to come out and do lots of creative stuff in your life, because it was, you couldn't really keep that inside. And also with the scrapbooking stuff with your mum as well.
Oh, yeah.
Might be worth mentioning that, because I think it leads well into the Lazy Unicorn stuff.
Throw to it.
Yeah. So my mom always loved paper craft, so scrapbooking, you know, the old school thing where you glue in your photos, your printed photos.
Got those little corners that you stick the photos in with.
And then you make it look beautiful. You add in some journaling. So, you know, what happened on a family trip, and you've got all the photos to go with it. And she also did card making. So from wedding invitations all the way through to your jolly Christmas card. So with that, she really liked making it all. And I was like, we're turning this into a business. And
how old were you then?
I think I was 11. Yeah. So then we started teaching classes, and we traveled around doing that. So it was very fun. Every weekend was workshops.
Yeah, so much more makes sense now, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And what a young entrepreneur as well. And again, supported in that. I think that that's really lovely that you sort of, yeah. Now, we're going to pause that story for a second, and we're going to talk about little whippersnapper Tyler before the man could grow a beard, and when he was just a whippersnapper. Talk to me about young Tyler.
Yeah, interesting one there, I guess, thinking back. Well, before I could grow a beard, I was definitely surrounded with a lot of them. My dad is a Harley Davidson motorcycle dealer, so he was doing that for about probably 20 years before I came along. Maybe 15. So I sort of grew up in that interesting scene of, you know, going for motorbike rides every weekend and stuff like that, whether it be in the sidecar or on the back. And we also did a lot of stuff with vintage car rallies, which was really fun. My dad, he's a fitter and turner by trade, but then ended up buying his own motorcycle business dealership. And so he sort of became like a mechanic slash, you know, small business owner. And motorcycle dealer. They had Harley Davidson, Polaris, Suzuki, Kawasaki, and some others down the track. And you know, that was really interesting as well. Growing up, I had this weird perception of myself as some kind of lucky rich family that I was part of. But really, all that meant was dad worked really hard, and I was in a small business family that you know, we all kind of pitched in when we needed to. And now having my own small business, it's interesting to see that other side and actually understand it a lot deeper. It's been good lately. We've been having some chats with my dad about different, you know, things that you go through in that time. And I'm like, he's gone through them all already. And it's nice to come out the other side as an adult and see some of that and understand it a bit more. So I've got a couple of older siblings. I've got three older brothers and a sister. So I'm the very baby of the family. So I've sort of almost grown up as a only child, but with some siblings, because there's a 10-year gap between my youngest brother aside from me. So it's been an interesting way growing up, sort of having that older influence myself and always feeling like I'm a little more mature than the other kids that were around me. But, you know, being able to sort of do whatever I want, because I did have that freedom of being an only child in that sense. But yeah, so I grew up always enjoying being creative as well myself. And it was nice that my dad did have that, you know, history of having his own business and sort of making his own path. So I never really felt too much pressure to do one specific thing or anything like that. Growing up, I did a lot of music. I played saxophone, trumpet, bass, guitar, piano, didgeridoo, and accordion. my dad plays accordion, so I got that one from him. So I've always really, really had fun with that musical side. Always been in a lot of bands growing up, just like school bands and stuff like that. You know, the school brass band to begin with. I'd play my little piano on stage with the Rocker Steadfords and stuff like that. And, you know, be able to carry that into my adulthood now, which is fun to mess around with music still. And a lot of passion as well. I used to write my name in chalk over and over again on like, you know, like my grandma's driveway or something. And it never made sense to me until I realized I wanted to be a graphic designer. And I love typography and all of that sort of stuff. So there's little things like that growing up that sort of now make a lot more sense.
That's the one. It's my favorite, you know, bit of Steve Jobs. You know, you can only connect the dots looking back.
That's it.
And I've always loved that one because, yeah, there's so many things that you experience in life. And, yeah, quite often they don't make sense until later, and particularly things that you're drawn to. Mm. And you go, that is so obscure. Like, why? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh.
Yep. And I, even with, you know, going to school, like we graduated in 2010, like it wasn't that long ago. But even, you know, 2008, 2009, when I was starting to look at careers and what I wanted to do after school, graphic designer wasn't even mentioned to me at all, which sounds bizarre only, you know, 12 years later or so, thinking back and being like, graphic design is huge. It was everywhere. It is everywhere. You know, it's always been a thing. But at school, I did graphics. I did, you know, workshop stuff. But that was more like, you know, that ArchiCAD and a lot of that sort of stuff, rather than the actual graphic design, creating logos, brands, signage, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's interesting. I love being able to talk to kids about that these days, because I wish, you know, in that way that someone would have came and said, I think you need to be a graphic designer.
And I must say this, well, these stories resonate, you know, quite strongly with my own, which is why I sort of enjoy them, because, you know, my dad was self-employed, and that was actually part of the reason that he was like, I just want you blokes to work for the government and I want you to have 7-day fortnights guaranteed, you know, and, you know, what is
rusted
it?
Days off.
Rusted days
flexible
off.
Flexible time.
Hour yep. for lunch, you know, 9 till 4, but you only need to be effective for an hour a day. And look, you know, for our public service, I am just having a bit of a stitch here.
But, it is good though.
Yeah, it is. It is good. The perks are sensational. Because, you know, same thing coming from a family where, you know, dad ran his own small business, like they worked their ring out. Mm. And that's, you know, my memory is, you know, dad leaving at 7, you know, get home at 6, dinner with the family.
7 days a week, pretty much.
Yeah. And then at 7 o'clock, he's back at the desk, you know, for another hour or two.
And what did your dad do, by the way?
Mate, fabrics and wall coverings.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
No. So most of the hotels here in Brisbane have his fabrics and wall coverings.
That's awesome. So that's very niche as well.
Mate, super
something
niche.
You'd know like so much about that you would never expect because of that.
No. So I grew up, we would always have like Magna in the 80s and then Ford Falcon station wagons into the 90s that was like racked with fabric samples. So yeah, so Redelman Fabrics was the company that he worked with primarily. And yeah, there were just, and he, you know, had a big warehouse that again, and it was just fabrics.
That's awesome.
Like that's my whole childhood. So like, wow. If you ever needed stuff for arts and crafts, dad had a pretty banging fabrics collection.
You guys should have talked earlier than this.
Yeah. He still has some of them too, which is because again, never throws anything out.
Oh yeah. Same.
Yeah. And like still has like rolls of fabric stashed away.
That's pretty cool though.
Just couldn't part with. But look, that was the funniest thing was, you know, there's myself and two brothers. And yeah, the dream for all of us was that we'd go and get real jobs, and all three sons are self-employed. So
nailed it. Bit of a switcheroo on that one.
and it's an interesting thing, you know, sort of how you become, you know, a product of your environment. There's obviously stuff that you're drawn to. But you know, listening to both of your stories, it's interesting to sort of see where you've gone.
Yeah.
with that. Because, you know, with yourself, Alex, after school, what happened next?
I studied architecture for a little while. I didn't really enjoy the actual work we were doing. So I was like, I just need to get hands-on in the industry. So I applied for every fourth year graduate job that I could in first year. And because they didn't have first
cheeky
year jobs.
Cheeky bit of confidence there. I love that about you.
And didn't get any of those. Got a lot of interviews though. So I thought, okay, what's the next best thing? Okay, I'll work in accounts in an architecture firm. So I got an accounts job in an architecture firm. Started then learning all about, you know, how does it work, asking every individual person in the architecture firm, and figured out definitely didn't want to do that anymore. So went back and studied marketing, which I thought could be pretty cool. And that was after a few of the sales guys came into the architecture firm and they're like, oh, I studied marketing. And I was like, cool, don't want to do your job, but what else does marketing do? And yeah, realized that that was, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely.
You get really passionate about
a
stuff.
A turning point for you, I think, like a little light bulb moment.
And then I also worked for my stepmom's company, which was a childcare catering company. And I learned a lot about nutrition there, which was cool, but also the marketing just embedded into it. So I was the marketing person for the business, which was great. And yeah, that was kind of my journey. Then it was just, okay, I'll be a freelancer. And I did that here and there. Wasn't that successful at it, but gave it a red hot go and then just got various jobs in accounts, marketing, and design.
Design, yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, sir?
After school? So I figured out right at the end of school, you know, grade 12, I started looking around at different universities and stuff like that. I was really lucky to have some friends at that point who, you know, had just started at uni and stuff like that, like some older siblings of some of my friends from my class and whatnot. So I would ask them questions about it, you know, tried to figure out what the landscape of that university side was in Brisbane. So I'm from Kingaroy, which is about 3.5 hours from Brisbane. So I was looking to make that move, make sure that I got out of the small town just to at least stretch my legs and see what's out there. And, you know, it was a bit scary, a bit daunting because I'd hardly even ever really been to Brisbane at all, but I knew I had to kind of get out there and give it a crack. So I looked at different uni courses. I had a look at, you know, Griffith, UQ, QUT. There was one back then called Quantum College, and they did a lot of like more condensed, you know, 1 to 2 year courses on animation, web design, illustration, all that sort of stuff. So I was pretty dead set on doing one of those. I did a couple of trial days, but ended up changing over and I was doing games and interactive entertainment at QUT. And that was really interesting because I've always loved the video game side and also the design that goes into that. Like that you would know there's so many layers to that. Sound design, game design, you know, map design, character development, so much. That was an extremely intriguing and like interesting first year of uni. Really loved it, but it did sort of make it a bit more polarizing that it wasn't the game side that I wanted to go into. It was more the design side. So I took 6 months off, moved back to Kingaroy for a bit, worked with my dad at his motorbike shop and sort of reset, and then came back and then did interactive and visual design. So that took me probably like 5 years or so to finish, I think it was, in the end. But during that time, I was lucky enough to get a graphic design job with our mutual friend, James Payne over at Oz Garage. And that was amazing. As soon as I got like a real world design job, I feel like it went from, you know, 0 to 100 in the space of a month. And I was very lucky that James trusted me to kind of throw my spin on things and just throw me in the deep end in a very supportive way. And although I am thankful that I did go to uni and I did end up graduating, it's kind of a nice achievement for myself. I feel like what I learned in that, you know, first year or two of working in the field taught me like 100 times more than my actual uni course. All the uni really did was give me that confidence to say, I'm good enough to make that next move. But yeah, it was interesting.
And it's tough, isn't it? Because those first couple of years, and it's interesting with both of your stories, are actually quite similar in the sense that you try a few things and rather than, you know, figuring out precisely what you want to do, you get a very clear picture of what you strongly dislike.
That's it.
And what you absolutely do not want to do, which I think is quite funny. And, you know, it sort of mirrors across the both of you where you're like, oh, architect accounts. And then you go and do those things. And you're like, mate, this sucks. Yep. Like when you actually see the reality of some jobs as compared to what you imagine they might be.
That's it.
And you go and try them. And you're like, is this it?
It's genuinely the best way to figure out what you want to do because worst case scenario, you figure out what you don't want to do.
Absolutely. And like, I'm all about that. Like just trying stuff. And if it sucks, don't do it again. Like,
that's it.
None of that sunk cost fallacy stuff where you got to follow it through forever and ever.
No. Nah.
Like if it sucks, you go, okay, cool, cross that off. You know, I definitely don't want that.
I think the only way to keep afloat in this day and age where everything is changing so much, whether that's with jobs, housing, like literally everything is just change, change, change. You need to be flexible. Otherwise, you will sink. That's all there is about it. So I think it's never a bad thing to change your mind, but you're doing it for reasons that you've now learned in that process.
Absolutely. So, Alex, you've figured out all the things you don't like. You've studied marketing. Where to next?
So I got my dream job at an agency, which was, you know, I didn't think that I would necessarily like to, yeah, just do marketing for the rest of my life. So I was like, okay, I'll get my dream job when I'm still pretty young. Got that job and I was a marketing consultant for an agency, which was super fun. I got to advise on all different massive projects and had monthly coaching sessions with my clients, which was great. And I really, really loved it. However, I also really loved music and I really loved design and I wanted to be able to also do those things. So we started a business to design, which was a fashion
design to business.
Yeah,
it was like it was a fashion meetup group. I believe you came along to a few of them. We had some panel discussions. We had some speakers and basically for Alex and I, it was just an excuse to start being more social with our creative community and making a platform for that because we couldn't find one that existed.
Now, I've also just got to hit the brakes here and rewind a little bit because in case you haven't picked it up, these two are also a couple. now, we've sort of jumped into a bit where you now know each other and you're doing things together.
Yeah.
Just a teeny tiny little rewind. Where and how did you guys cross paths?
Yeah, so we met on Tinder in 2014.
Yeah.
And we had some mutual friends as well, which was kind of cool. And, you know, we thought, let's grab a drinks, you know, just hang out, basically. We'd been texting for a month or so and chatting about architectural illustration or graphic design or whatnot. Funny story, I remember I was at a party once and this girl was like looking over my shoulder while I was messaging Alex on Tinder at the time, and she's like, oh, let me see what you guys are talking about. Oh, you're on Tinder. Grabs my phone. She's like, ew, she's talking about architectural illustration. And I was like, I love that. Give it back. Go away. but yeah, so it was really nice. Once we finally caught up, we realized, you know, we both had a lot of aspirations in that creative way. And I think for both of us, it was the first person we'd met in a while that could kind of match that level of energy and excitement towards creating the future that we wanted rather than just like, I feel like a lot of people at that time, you know, and midway through uni and all that, they're just like, yeah, whatever. I go to uni, I come home, I do my part-time job at the mall and, you know, that's pretty much my life. And I'm like, yeah, but what do you want to do next? Like, let's talk about that. And it was really nice to find that excitement with Alex. But yeah, that was about 2014, I think. And we sort of moved in not too long after that. And yeah, just been doing stuff together since then and brainstorming things. So it's been about 8 years now that we've been together. And I'm not going to say it's all been, you know, straightforward and simple, but we've found ways to work and everything that we like to do and support each other in those times. As Alex mentioned before, you know, she went freelance for a bit. That's really hard at points. So I was supporting her financially with my full-time job. then, you know, when I would do my more experimental things, she would support me and we'd kind of just help each other out like that. And we did actually try and keep our sort of business side separate for a bit.
It was way too hard.
It was probably like about, you know, 8 months or so of our relationship, the first, you know, section. And we're like, you know, maybe we shouldn't, you know, mix that stuff. Maybe we shouldn't, you know, we can help each other, but like, let's just pretend like that's your project. This is my project. And as soon as we just gave in and like combined everything and just, you know, agreed that we were 50-50 on everything, it just all became so much better. And yeah.
It was a little bit daunting just to go back to when we met, because Tyler was a third year student in interactive and visual design and I was a first year student.
That's right. We were studying the same thing.
So I was like, I never wanted to date a designer. I don't want anyone to be better than me who I date. And I always thought I'd be the breadwinner. And here we are. He was a better designer and still is. So
it's all right. You're better with the marketing stuff.
Yeah.
But no, it was really good like that. And we've definitely learned. I think we've been at each other's biggest source of, like, I guess, inspiration, but just like learning, like constant iteration and figuring things out, talking, you know, well through midnight on different projects we want to do. And sometimes as well, looking back at all the different things we've tried and that we've done, it can feel a bit crazy, you know, and a bit underwhelming at times, seeing those things maybe not all come to fruition, because as you know, as a creative, you got to try lots of different things. But the reality is, if we hadn't have tried those things, it wouldn't have led us to where we are now. And we've got so much, we're just now starting to see where some of those things we've done in the past, oh, they were, you know, pivotal things for changes in thinking and all that sort of stuff that have led now to the things we can do now. And same now, like what we're doing now with Vector Etch, that's something we've never done before. We've never managed 8 staff, 10 staff, and then also been a couple, and then also run a company, and then also tried to have other projects on the go. That's a new thing, and we'll see what that leads us to.
Because they are, you know, quite complex decisions as well, and also, you know, going into partnership, you know, with your partner. Mm. You know, my wife has on occasion said, oh, you know, I could come and work in your business. And I'm like, nah. And, you know, respectfully.
Totally.
Nah. Because I reckon she'd come in here and go, can you guys stop this place being such a frat house? Whereas, you know, we kind of like, you know, our shenanigans.
Yep.
I'm not sure it would be. Look, she would probably help to, you know, square us up and,
yep,
you know, actually probably make it a more successful business, which would probably be a good thing, because she's so much more organized. But certainly not as not as creative and probably a bit more risk averse.
Yeah, it is hard to find that balance too, even with friends. It's been lovely knowing you for the past, I think it's been 7 years or so. Almost the same time I've known Alex, really, because it's been since I've started working at Oz Garage, I believe 2015, I think that was. And yeah, it's been nice knowing you because, you know, you're a little bit older than me. You've been doing this for longer and it's nice to see someone who's really stuck it out, but I've also seen you adapt to things, change to things. As we said before, that you got to be flexible. Or you'll probably sink in 2022.
Mate, you just got to keep winging it. Like, you
that's
know,
it.
I started a podcast and a YouTube channel this year.
Nice.
Because I was, you know, looking at some of the people that work for me and they're doing it quite well. And I actually really admired that. And I looked at it and I went, that kind of looks like fun.
It is.
Oddly, it's harder than it looks.
Yeah,
it is. How hard's a YouTube channel?
Yep.
But like even the podcasting stuff, because I was using my phone and then I'm like, oh, the sound's no good. And then I, you know, got a little Rode mic and plugged that in. And then I'm like, oh, maybe a camera. And
I think we've done the same journey and we completely understand. And we still don't have a successful podcast. So you're killing it on us there. Yeah.
But you end up just having to buy all the things.
You do.
Once you buy all the things, it does make it easier. But that's a significant barrier to entry. But you know, I'm sure I'm much the same as you guys, where I just like doing new stuff.
That's it.
I actually kind of like that, being a beginner and just going, I don't know how to do any of this. I don't know how to work it. I don't know how to turn it on. I know nothing about it. But that's never stopped me before.
That is probably the biggest thing that, you know, we like to talk about in Hold On To, is that, you know, the willingness or the bravery or the stupidity
even,
to jump into a new industry or a new field without actually knowing anything about it, but also respectfully to the people who are already in that field and start to learn about it, start to make friends, start to make connections, start to master those new skills. It's really exciting. It can be really daunting, but if you can figure out how to do that, then, you know, you're going to be have some really great success in the future, because it is something you have to do, jump into those new areas and give it a crack.
And just give it hell, because, like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You know, I'm going to fail terribly. And, you know, my joke is the only people that are starting when you listen, and it's like, hi, mom. You know, like, you know, maybe one friend might listen to it, but I'm like, you know, if anybody else listens to it, it's a bonus.
That's it. So worst case scenario, you learn something.
Nobody's watching anyway. Like, in the early days of trying stuff, and this is something I've come to appreciate, everybody's so caught up in their own stuff. Nobody's paying attention.
Yep.
Like, if it eventually catches on, great. But that all takes a year, 2 years, 3 years. You know, you've got a long time. You can be stuffing it up for ages. And then if you keep trying, you kind of accidentally get better.
Mm.
And you can't beat that sort of attitude. Because I loved when I met you guys, like, I loved that enthusiasm that you had to, like, just try stuff. And it was one of those events that I came to that you hosted.
The Design to Business ones.
Yeah. Yep. And Bailey Nelson. So
yeah,
you had
Scott Triana.
Yeah. So I am a convert.
Nice.
I actually buy nothing but theirs.
We do too. It's great. I actually love the brand though. I love the business.
Great brand. Love the people. But also, because I'd always bought my glasses at, you know, I don't know.
OPSM. Yeah, or OPSM. Yep.
And, you know, I'd be $600 or $700 out of pocket for one set of glasses, which hurt. So when I inevitably broke them, I'd like be gluing them back together and stuff. Mate, $150 like a really nice looking pair of glasses.
They're trendy.
I splash out and I buy two. I now have, like, you know, day glasses, and I've got, like, sunnies as well.
They look great.
And look, I feel like they look great. I have, you know, once or twice a year, I'll get a compliment. They've got ones that are good for big fat heads like mine, which works really well. But that only came about because I went to your event and I listened to him speak. And I remember thinking, what a legend, you know, what a good person. And it was very much this same sort of conversation where he'd sort of gone, you know, bugger it, what's the worst that could happen, gave it a go, and has built a great company, a great brand, a great product, you know, to the point where I buy nothing but. And I was super upset. I'd actually just got a new pair, had my eyes tested, the whole shebang, and I'm mowing the backyard. And then I see something on the ground. I'm like, oh, God. I'd actually dropped my new glasses, mowed them, and I could see fragments of them, like brand new, like killing me.
Hey, if you want glitter for your lawn, just come to us, the glitter dealers.
Oh, kill
that's
me.
Brutal.
Yeah, but those events that you started running, that was sort of your first foray into, I guess, a combined.
Yeah, a little bit. So we actually had done, we'd organized some gigs and stuff for my band over the years. I have been in a few bands over that time. We did realize Alex actually came and saw me at one of my gigs before we had met, which is hilarious looking back.
On purpose I was or like, by accident?
By accident. By accident. Yeah, it was in Ipswich. So,
and I'm from Ipswich.
Around Alex's local hood, and found this hood. But yeah, so that was pretty funny. But we with that music side, we both love to do the organization. We'd organize gigs for friends and stuff like that. And some of our friends were involved in that too. So it was really nice to work with that. And it was such a fulfilling, you know, sense of satisfaction when you see something go from, I hope someone shows up, you know, I'm putting together some songs, and then suddenly you've sold out a room of 150 people.
And you've not only sold out a room, but you've sold the merch to go along with it before the show. And that was really cool to see the band actually make money. In an industry where you're not meant to make money until you're a touring artist all over the world. So,
and even then you typically get ripped off of it, you know.
So having those little challenges and building an event together, marketing it, getting the people there, and then seeing everyone so excited and enjoying it, that was really cool. So then when we started doing Design to Business, it was bringing both of our skills together, but both of us wanted to get into fashion design somewhere along the line. We haven't got there yet. And so we were like, let's just learn from people who've already done it. Yeah, so we started hosting events and getting speakers in from different companies, like Bailey Nelson, the co-founder there, came. And yeah, we learned a lot. We've made a lot of connections in the industry. And yeah, we'll dive into fashion design when we get to it.
But I don't feel, you know, as yeah, I guess I did do this shirt.
You're literally wearing your own design. You are a fashion designer.
I had to do it. I had to do it. Now, this is some 35 mil film photos that I took at one of our events, which I've then turned into a shirt design. So that was really fun.
So see, fashion.
Done deal. I'll tick that off on my resume that doesn't exist. But yeah, it was cool seeing that too. Like, we didn't know what we were really building to. We didn't know why we were making these connections. You know, we knew why, but we didn't know where that would take us. And yeah, now is a good time where we can look back and go, okay, you know, in 2019, we were asked to be part of a coffee festival. That ended up having 5,000 people come along. We organized it in 4 weeks, and there was only one other guy plus us that did the whole thing. So if we had not have done those other little random design to business events with literally 10 to 20 people coming, or the gigs with 100 people coming, we really couldn't have done it. We couldn't have even fathomed that and thought that that could be a possibility.
Yeah. It'd be all too overwhelming.
It would be, yeah. It still feels overwhelming looking back to that. But it was actually one of the things I did learn in uni that I appreciate and I've kept with me. It was a thing called planned happenstance. And it basically means creating your own luck. And you can't take advantage of the things or the opportunities that are thrown your way unless you prepare for them in advance. So it's basically saying, I'm learning now, I'm organizing myself now, I'm getting some experience now so that when an opportunity like that's thrown to me, I can actually take advantage of it. And I think the same with you with this podcast. You know, you might have thought a couple of years ago, podcast sounds fun, but I don't really know how to get to it. And a couple of years later, you're like, all right, bam, 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 bought all the equipment, got some guests in, I know what I'm going to do, done.
That's actually exactly how it happened. Because James and I actually got together from Oz Garage a couple of years ago and we had a crack at putting a thing together and it just didn't work and it didn't make sense and it wasn't, I don't know, it just, it wasn't the time for it. And it was something that, again, and I gave it another nudge in 2019 and again, it didn't quite, it hadn't evolved. How do I say this? It's the vibe. Like, it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And then where this came out of was I was invited to sort of take part in this Brisbane Small Business group earlier this year. And part of the responsibilities with that group was to do a live stream every Tuesday. And I was using that as an opportunity to like practice talking to camera.
Nice.
Because I'd had a social media person who was working on, still does work for me. But she was helping to advise back to us. Because something that we've struggled with over time is promoting our own brand. We've found that exceedingly difficult to do.
It is hard, very hard.
And she said to me, she said, you know, you need to be on camera. You need to like film yourself when you're doing these things and show stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. Like, I felt so uncomfortable talking to a camera. So what I did was I used that opportunity to go, okay, I'm going to get good at this. And I'm just going to start, even though I feel like really stupid, holding my camera and going, good day, guys. You know, the thing that really terrified me was there is a segment of people within a, you know, like your business coaching type thing that it doesn't feel very genuine. Mm. You know, there's a lot of pump. But
we know those hype men.
The hype. And I sort of go, okay, but where's your success? Mm. You know, there's a lot of chat, but where's your scoreboard with the runs that you've already hit? And if there's not a big score on your scoreboard, I don't know if you're in a correct place to be giving that sort of advice.
Yeah, the giving advice is the strong point. Hey, talk about things.
But absolutely.
It's the giving direct advice and acting like.
Yeah. And just regurgitating Tony Robbins type stuff.
Yep.
You know.
Gary V.
Yeah, feel the power within. Yeah, Gary's obviously one of the big showboaters now. But again, man's got runs on the board.
Totally.
So you're like, respect. You know, whether or not you enjoy his style, you got to tip the hat and go, you know, man's made something.
But if you regurgitate him.
But if you're regurgitating him, no.
Yeah. And I guess I'm wildly against that. And, you know, I've obviously got a bit of experience, but I still don't see myself as being in a position to give advice. I don't know about you guys, but I still feel like I'm only getting started. Mm-hmm. Like I still feel like a beginner. So I don't feel like I should be giving anybody, you know, business advice. Marketing advice, hell yeah, mate, I'll tell you exactly what I think, and I feel pretty damn sure that I'm right. But in terms of running a business, you know, that's a much, you know, much bigger exercise.
Absolutely.
And that was my concern with this Brisbane small business thing, was I'm like, I don't know, I'm not sure where to go with this. And I just went bugger it, like, and I got somebody on, and I talked to them, and I'm like, well, this is pretty good. Quite like this.
Yeah.
And now I'm like literally inviting people who I think are cool, who I think do cool things, to like just come and talk to me, share their stories, share the story with, you know, a community of people that, you know, are in small business, and then hopefully find an audience outside of that of people that again go, well, man, I'd like to make stuff too. I've been told that I need to go to school, go to uni, get a job, retire and die. You know, maybe there's something else.
Maybe. Well, I commend you on doing the podcast for sure.
Yeah.
Alex really introduced me to podcasts around that 2015 mark. And we actually went on a trip to Sydney. Alex was part of a course at that time. So she was doing some stuff in Sydney around that marketing and business side of things. And so I was just chilling, taking trains, walking the city, enjoying, you know, some podcasts. And Alex had recommended this podcast called Smart Passive Income by Pat Flynn. And seriously, just like opened my brain, being able to listen to other people who do have runs on the board and just talk, like not giving advice or anything, just talking about their journey and what they've done. And just hearing other people who are more like-minded and open to new things, new ideas, and trying different stuff to make the lives that they wanted, that seriously just made me, it kind of, everything lined up a little bit more in my own direction. And I went, oh yeah, I think I can do the things that I want to do in the way that I want to do it while also living the life that I want to do, and not still expecting it to be overnight or anything, but just having that open path and then having those conversations with Alex over many, many years to figure out where we want to be at.
The willingness to try, because I think that there is a, you know, there's a lot of construct in society that is designed to keep you in your box. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, for society to operate successfully, it is actually pretty important that most people stay in their box. But like, you just seem to know, and all the people that I find myself friends with tend to be people that go, nah, middle finger to it.
Yep.
I don't fit in that, nor do I ever want to. So you've created a couple of events together. What came after that those initial business events? What happened next?
That is a great question. I think channeling back to like, yeah, that 2015, 2016 period.
I came back to working a few different jobs and seeing, I was like, none of those really were what I wanted to keep pursuing at that time. I needed to learn more. So I got a few jobs doing accounting and
marketing
and design, and just kept, you know, playing around with it. I liked the variety of having three jobs at once. And with that, then was like, okay, I kind of want to go more down the design route. And this is where I got introduced to Vector Edge, and so that's how that happened. Tyler and I were both friends with Andy and Ella at the time, who were running it together. And yeah, Tyler got offered a job with them.
They asked, yeah, so it was just the two of them, and they were operating out of the same location it is now at Yerongpilly. But it was just early days, you know, they had one laser cutter out the back and a little shop at the front for Ella's stuff, which was really nice. And I actually went to uni with Ella as well, but she was a couple of years ahead of me. So she was sort of friends, and Alex and I always admired those guys for making their own path. And, you know, she was one of those truly like successful artists that you see, but not cause like, you know, someone just picked her up and, you know, went, oh, I'm going to make you successful. It's like, she put in the hard work. She was a really good artist, and She would do the markets, do the Etsy, you know, all the stuff, as well as then Andy was starting to manufacture their own stuff with the acrylic, which really then helped it to push it along. And yeah, so Alex and I really looked up to them and we sort of were friends with them, and we always looked up and wanted to be closer to them. And one day we visited and we asked if we could, you know, have a little bit of a tour of the studio. They showed us the laser cutter and whatnot. And it was a couple of weeks later, they just messaged me and said, hey, we're looking to hire someone, you know, our first employee. We're looking for a graphic designer. We're wondering if you might be interested. And I was like, damn it, why do I have to have a full-time job right now? This sounds awesome. But Alex had just finished up at another job that she was doing. And I said, I'm not available, but Alex is. She's also a graphic designer. And she's a lot better with the technical stuff and the sort of, you know, the measurements and sort of setting things up for, say, laser cutting design. So slingshotted her in.
That day, went in for an interview, had a little trial on the computer. Never done laser cutting design before. It's not something that you can really learn. There Until wasn't now. A uni course or anything like that. So just kind of applied what I already knew from graphic design, asked a few questions, asked why do we do this? And yeah, it all worked. I passed the little trial and got the job. And yeah, within a week, they're like, please never leave us. And,
and Alex said, look, to be fair, I probably will in like 6 months.
I don't have a very long shelf life of being an employee.
But you're very upfront about that.
Yeah, I am.
And they were like, oh, at least, you know, we respect your honesty with that. But I think what was cool was that you kind of systematized a lot of things and made it so that your initial job there wasn't as necessary. Yes. So like technically you could have left, but instead you moved into a different area of the business to concentrate on, whether it be the marketing, whether it be more so, you know, streamlining the laser cutting itself or marketing and getting more clients.
Yeah, and did some more graphic design work for them.
And then one cool thing about VectorEtch now is that we have a massive library of different designs that are all, you know, either we've created them or the staff created them. And that way you can get started really easily by just going onto our website, picking a shape, ordering it in one of our colors, and we cut it out and we send it to you. So there's no actual design knowledge necessary to get started with, say, jewelry making through us, which is really fun. And that was a lot of that was Alex setting that up from the get-go.
Because, Alex, when you joined, were you, like, making jewelry at that stage, or is that something that sort of came as part of hanging out there and going, ooh?
Well, funnily enough, I don't wear jewelry. I never thought I would design jewelry. I was like, oh, this is cool. I can design for other people. I get their vision. That's great. But I was like, oh, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't wear that. A few months later, started wearing brooches and it just kept increasing. I still don't have my ears pierced. I did at the time, I think, but I'm just hopeless at putting on jewelry. So I just don't really wear it. However, I started designing for Tyler's nieces, really wanted some little cute bee hair clips. And I was like, I can make that. That's cool. That's a cool Christmas present for them. And I posted in a brooch group saying, oh, this is what I made for my nieces. And
on Facebook,
people started ordering them. And I was like, oh, we're taking orders now. Okay. Yep. Let's do this. And it kind of just blossomed from there into my own brand, Lazy Unicorn. And it was kind of like my own personal brand, whereas I would just post up anything I was experimenting with or making. And yes, then started hosting workshops to teach other people, because I didn't really enjoy the making side of it itself. I enjoyed the designing and I enjoyed learning how to put things together and making them come to life, making them look beautiful. And then as soon as it got to, okay, I've done that one, let's move on to the next design. But people really wanted to learn how to do the making. So I thought, okay, I can teach that. I don't have to do all the making then. That's great.
Even better.
And then it got to a point with that, and I was working full-time at Oz Garage at that point. And again, shout out to Andy and Ella for being so supportive that they actually really encouraged Alex to have her own brand and her own project, kind of fueled by VectorEtch rather than what you see a lot of employees do of, excuse me, you're also doing that work for someone else, even if it's not anything of the same field. You know, that's usually a no-no in that way. So shout out to them for actually really supporting Alex.
Because that'd usually be squashed, or they'd expect you to put that into their inventory.
Oh, that's a Vector Edge brand now.
That's ours. Exactly. We sell that. We make money out of that stuff.
You want to work more, then you can come in and do that on the weekends.
That's a more commercial approach generally.
But that's it. But yeah, they I think what was great about Vector Edge too is that they really understood what they did. They wanted to do that really well, and they didn't mind what happened around that. And it's worked really well to build that strong business. But yeah, it allowed Alex to build Lazy Unicorn and tell Scott a bit about the where that led to and touring around with it.
Yes, please.
So I really enjoyed planning tours for bands. So I thought, why don't I plan my own tours for jewelry making workshops? And so plan them all around Australia. Would, you know, go to Perth 4 times a year, would travel down to Melbourne a lot because I had a lot of friends down there.
Probably 8 times a year to Melbourne, 4 or 5 times to Sydney, and then 4 or 5 times to probably Adelaide as well because it's nice and close there.
So, yeah, I really wanted to see Australia, so why not make it a business expense? And, yeah, met up with a lot of makers around and, yeah, really got to know them. And then started getting asked then to teach other people. So got flown to Adelaide to teach a group of ladies who all wanted to come together, bring their illustration skills all into making their own brand. So did like a group workshop and then I was like, oh, I've done this now. I can do that for other people. And that's where Laser Design School started.
Because I've seen the turnout at some of your events. And I mean, there's a lot of people that come to your jewelry making workshops. It really did become its own thing, didn't it?
It really did. It was a bit of one of those situations that we just didn't really expect it to take off that much, nor did we need it to. We weren't like, oh, this has to, if we're not getting 50 people to a workshop, you know, this isn't worth it and we've made a bad move. It was like, if we get 5 people along, that's pretty cool. Like, we just traveled around Australia teaching people, they're having fun. And one thing that really surprised us was at the end of every workshop, they would say, when are you coming back? I can't wait to do it again. And we thought, okay, but if you're coming along doing a workshop, you know, we've all done some of those workshops, whether it's, you know, pottery or, you know, making some origami or doing like a cooking class or something. It's kind of one and done. You go in, you're like, that was fun. Now, like, onto something else. And people wanted to keep coming back. And they really, really were excited just even to do the same class, making the same things. They just enjoyed the creative community there. And when we went to Perth and Adelaide, we really felt that, especially a lot of the people met at our events that had been friends on Instagram for years because they were all local makers. And they're like, oh my God, are you going to the Lazy Unicorn class? I'm going to go too. And then it's almost like a reunion / meet and greet, but actually they're there to do a workshop. And yeah, so it was a lovely creative project. People got to feel a sense of satisfaction for something that they've made. And that is really nice to see because a lot of us who are creatives do feel quite, timid and scared to put our work out there, scared that we're not going to be good at something straight up. So it's hard to try. But by guiding people through that and, you know, having a relatively easy class, like anyone can do it, but, you know, we're there to guide you and you can instill your creative individualism through that while coming out with a really good product in like 2 hours. So people felt a very good sense of satisfaction with that and that made us feel really warm and fuzzy as well.
And did that also lead to customers to Vector Edge?
It definitely did. So a lot of the people that would come to a workshop, they'd try making jewelry with acrylic in my workshop. And I would show them a lot of techniques because I didn't like just doing the simple stuff. I would be like, okay, well, if you were an advanced designer, this is what you would make. And I would show them all the different painting techniques and, you know, how we've done the engraving and how it all goes together. So they would come to the workshop as a, is this my new hobby? Is this something that I'm going to be doing long term? Am I going to make a business out of this? And a lot of people started their jewelry making business after coming to a workshop, which was very cool. So then they'd laser cut with Vector Etch. And yeah, it's blossomed from there and has been yeah, quite cool and unexpected.
Because, yeah, you've built like a whole network of supporters then. Like, so around Australia, you've got these groups of people that, you know, are into this. And as you said, you've almost like built like the reunion tour.
It's pretty sweet. Like one time in Adelaide, I just remembered, it may have been the first time we went to Adelaide and we got an Uber to just drop us off in town somewhere. We wanted to find some coffee. We found this really nice cafe, got a coffee. We're feeling great. And started to walk around, have a look at some other shops. And we found this really cute little plant shop. It was like a plant and gift shop. And we went in, we had a look around. They had some acrylic jewelry in there for sale. And we just thought that was really exciting to find.
I started noticing that I knew some of the makers who were stocked in the store. So I was commenting like, oh, that's cool. That brand there. Yep.
And then she's like, oh, what are you guys doing? And we're like, oh, we're just actually down from Brisbane. And yeah, we're doing some like little acrylic jewelry workshops actually. And she's like, oh, are you Laser Unicorn? I'm coming to your workshop tomorrow. So, we're like, this is wild. This is so crazy.
Too much. You're famous.
Famous in the most niche way that we would never have expected. But we just thought that was so cute and lovely to have that connection. And then we're like, all right, see you tomorrow. Next day she came. She brought us a little plant as a present and stuff that we were admiring. It was so sweet.
And see, I think that it's a real credit to you guys. You've always been good community builders, is something that I've noticed, is you guys do seem to have that capacity to bring people together. And that's something that I've always really enjoyed. And I've always enjoyed supporting your events. And part of the reason I do that as well is that I know how hard it is to get stuff off the ground and how hard it is to convince people to come to something when it's the first time. And it's not proven and people, you know, all too hard.
Totally.
Whereas I'm like, hell yeah.
Thank you
like,
for that.
Yeah. Yeah. What's that?
Appreciate like, it.
When, really appreciate when's it happening? That.
Because, you know, that's something that I would want. You know, I think that that's lovely to, you know, get something going and then get some support around it. But you guys have done that time and time again. And like one of the things that you've done more recently that I've really enjoyed, and I know I'm jumping around a bit here, but like you've done these car meets. Because we've got to get into your terrible car choices.
I'm all for it.
I'm all for it as well. The love of crappy old cars, where did that come from?
Oh, for me, it's definitely my dad and my siblings as well. You know, like one of my brothers, he's got a 73 Monaro HQ. My other brother, he's always had old Statesmans and stuff like that. My dad's always had an old Statesman or a this or that. So yeah, I've grown up very like instilled with that interesting choice of cars. That's only a few I've mentioned, but yeah, like my dad's always done up a lot of old 20s and 30s cars. So he did up a 1927 Model A when I was like, you know, this high. He had an old Chevy that was like, it was like an 83 or something, but he actually like built this extended cab onto it. And the thing was like 7 meters long. It was crazy with a massive, like 500 cubic inch bloody caddy motor in it. And he'd shaved the whole, inner, you know, workings of the, engine bay. So it just looked like this tiny little massive V8 in the middle, on this massive truck. And we used to all pile into that when I was, you know, tiny, bloody 6, 7 of us into a car to go on bloody camping or something.
So this was inevitable. That's it was inevitable.
But it is funny that dad went into motorbikes and more so on that side, although he's always had a passion for cars. And I've never quite jumped onto the motorbike trend as much, even though I appreciate them, I love them, I grew up riding them. But my heart's always stayed with the cars. And my first car was meant to be a 47 Chev, like pickup, like the Australian one with the ute tray back. And we still have that. We just didn't quite get it finished because like me, dad likes to take on a few too many projects.
There's always time.
And then he ended up actually helping me get my first car, which was an MX-5, a 1990 NA MX-5. So that was a fun choice for, you know, finishing off school, driving to school with the top down.
So cool.
Looking back, I was like, damn, that was actually the sickest first car, like P-plate car. I've had a few other old cars. So dad also has an old Benz. It's a 88 model, 300 SEL. And that was something, you know, he had around 1999 and he's still got it sitting in the paddock. Love to revive that one. You know, and mum and dad both had some old Mercs, you know, the old Statesmans and stuff like that, as well as the older cars in the 20s, 30s, 40s sort of range. And so, yeah, I've always grown up playing my Game Boy in the back of a Model A while going to a freaking vintage car rally or something like that. So it was definitely inevitable for me.
And the origin, so these car meets, and, you know, for, again, for people that haven't encountered the style of car meet that these guys run, and Alex, before we go any further, like, mate, are you down with all this too? Is this?
I'm so down with it. I really love looking at all the cars and admiring it, and also seeing Tyler get so excited by it. It's quite funny. So I like it.
Yeah, that's always been a lucky bonus that Alex is cool with the car stuff and has an interest in it, but, you know, doesn't get as over the top as me, which is good. Probably a bit of sense in the relationship.
Yeah, and I didn't live too far away from like Queensland Raceway, so I would always go there with dad or boyfriend I was seeing at the time, going to the drags and all the different car events. So very much enjoyed it.
So not totally polarized by it. It's like you'd notice that my wife's never joined me going to any of the car events. My little dude, I'm trying to, again, not trying to push him into it. I'm pretty sure he'll end up enjoying it in one way or another.
Oh, definitely.
But, you know, just taking him along and showing him all the cool things. But, yeah, my wife's like, yeah, nah. Like, absolutely not.
That's all good. No, it is. It's usually one way or the other, hey?
Yeah, it is. But, look, what I really like about the car events that these guys run is there can be a very elitist nature in car meets, where, you know, people have a go at you for what sort of wheels you're running, or, you know, whether your taste is, you know, in vogue at the moment, or, you know, like there's a real, you know, there's a real elitist culture to it. And the thing I've enjoyed immensely about the car events that these guys put on is that, like, you just turn up in whatever piece of crap you're currently enjoying.
That's it.
And there is something sensational about that. So people will turn up and they're like, oh my God, look at this absolute, and like, oh my God, some of them like full shit
beige
boxes.
Monster, like, yeah. Rusty, and beige.
Like, rusty, like, needs work. You'd sort of probably, any normal person would look at it and go, man, that's got to go to the tip. But if you're into cars, you look at it and you go, ooh, they were very special. And I see the potential. And look at the velour.
That's it.
and like, I really dig that. Like, I dig that so much. And there's been, you know, a lot of younger people as well that have come along to it that are into this sort of stuff, you know, buying their first car and potentially buying the first car that they're looking to modify. And, you know, it's been really supported by this community that you guys have created. And, you know, like, my cousin is hilariously, you know, he's bought a Prelude that doesn't work, and him and his mates swapping it, you know, doing an engine swap.
I see him every weekend working on it. I love that.
Unbelievable. And, like, I love it. But the fact that you guys have formed a community that supports that, I just think is the best.
Like,
I've been so stoked to attend those. And, but it really, for me, it crystallizes everything that you guys do, is that, you know, you bring people together, you lift them up, you give them a platform, you know, you encourage, you inspire, you support. And I guess that's something that you guys have always done since I've, first met you to this day. You know, even as, you know, life and business and everything else will give you the casual punch in the face, you know, you've still got that same attitude.
I really appreciate that. That is what, you know, we hope to do. And, yeah, that's really nice to see that it actually comes off that way. It is a lot of us being like, what the bloody hell are we doing? But hey, every now and then we have a win, and the slow cars and coffee have been a really nice example of that, where we literally set out just to make a bit of a morning where we have an excuse to hang with some friends, and vice versa, of course. And that's all it really needed to be. So putting not low expectations, but just like minimal expectations on it, as long as everyone's happy, everyone's having a good time, and of course, probably having some good coffee, which is our preference on that.
Again, mate, where's the Blend 43?
It's in the cupboard. It's just for you. But or
Blend,
yeah.
Blend 86 I was introduced to recently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, two scoops.
We all needed that one this morning, I think.
Hang on. Definitely. I think, yeah, mate, I've got a thing on here somewhere where I could actually do that And let me see if I can.
There it is.
Nailed I knew it. I had a rim shot on there somewhere. Like,
shout out to Scott, the podcast master.
My podcast master. It only took me like 3 minutes to find that. My timing is as impeccable as my dad jokes. Now, look, we've sort of run a little bit off track here. I'd love to know how you went from designing, working at Vector Edge, developing your own brand within that, to then somehow becoming co-owners. That's a bit of a jump.
It is. But it kind of worked in that order. It doesn't make it makes a lot of sense when we talk it out. Alex, you can probably explain it really well.
Well, I never expected to buy a business or buy into a business. And I was always like, no, I'll be the founder. Yep, that'll be me. I'll think of some crazy idea and make it happen.
We've got enough projects sitting there that we can definitely, you know, we thought if we're going to do something in the end that's more of our own business, it's going to be one of our own projects.
And then Ella wanted to move into a different career. And she was like, well, would you and Tyler like to buy part of my portion and be co-owners with Andy? And we were like, well, didn't really think this would ever be a possibility, but sure, let's give it a red hot go. And we did. And then about a year and a half later, Andy suggested that he wants to have a change in life and do something different. So we encouraged that. And he was like, so do you want to buy me out? And we did that. And
now it's all on our shoulders.
Yeah. And it's kind of like what have we done? But also, we've got this, we can do it. And now we haven't really changed much in the business. We've kind of just like let it run its course over time, but we have plans for it in the future and weaving our other projects in there because we have a lot of those.
Yeah. And one good thing with that too, just like, excuse me. Just like how Andy and Ella encouraged Alex to start Lazy Unicorn, we've been able to do the same with our staff, and everyone on the team now has a project of their own that they work on, you know, outside of hours or between work and whatnot. And there's usually always someone at the studio laser cutting or preparing. And oh my gosh, some of the stuff that our staff have created, it blows our minds. But I love that because it makes us realize that we've got lots more to learn, and it helps each other out. It helps us to learn about what's possible with laser cutting as well. And it gets them really excited and gives them another aspect of their job. We're all for people moving on and outgrowing us. That's awesome. But if we can find other ways to keep you here and keep you engaged and keep you learning, and help each other out, then that's really cool. So that's one very proud moment for us to be able to see everyone else bringing their projects to life.
And every few months we have a little chat with one of our employees, and they're just like, so you know how I've been working on my own project? Do you think I could have an extra day to work on that? So I'll work less for you and work more on my project. And it keeps happening. So yeah, I think we're doing the right thing because that was my trajectory. And look where it's led. So I am really supportive of everyone on the team, you know, finding their own project that they really want to work on, well, as also us supporting them and teaching them skills that can contribute to growing their own thing.
Yeah.
And I think I'd also like to loop back into, you know, buying into a business, because that's not that's not a step to be taken lightly. You want to talk me through some of the process, like some of the due diligence and things that you would have done, and you know, even like going and getting a loan for this sort of stuff?
Totally.
Because I mean, can you talk me through a bit of that?
Definitely. So it's all new stuff for us. Alex and I never really had any loans or anything before that. You know, I've had a car loan, which I paid out over 5 or 6 years or whatever, and that's it. So definitely, you know, we never had a home loan or anything like that. We were like, how's this even going to work? And you know, credit again to Andy and Ella for just having open conversation about that and then being like, what would be your possibility of, you know, buying in or this or that. So we met with some loan brokers and stuff like that, you know, just had those chats internally, with each other, and we decided to do vendor finance, which basically means that the person that we're buying out is essentially the bank in that case. We're paying them off over time rather than us going to a bank, getting a lump sum of money, giving it to them, and then us owing the bank. So there are upsides and downsides to that. The main downside is probably like it's a bit higher interest. And of course, you've then still got their kind of potential controlling interest as well. If anything happens with the loan, you know, they can then, that's was sort of our stipulation of, you know, you guys can take back the business if we fail to pay you out, which is totally fair. So we did that with Ella, and we did that over 3 years. And so we're like halfway through paying that one off at the moment. And then we did it over a longer period of, I think, 7 years with Andy, because that was 75% to buy him out then. But what we're looking at doing now is doing a bank loan, if we can manage to secure one, paying Andy out and what's remaining with Ella. And then that way we should have a bit less payments and a bit less interest over maybe a bit of a longer period, say 10 years with the bank. So it's all new to us, but we're an open book and happy to talk about it, because how else do you learn?
Because, you know, that's a big one for me as well, because I've never had to do that either. You know, my business was just, because again, I had no capacity to fund anything. And it was like, you know, dollar earned, dollar spent.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so I've never had to go down that path. So it's interesting. Okay, so through the vendor finance, which was basically that arrangement, but I guess you're at a point now, because you're a couple of years into your ownership, aren't you?
Yeah, probably about two and a half years. Yeah, so about a year with the full ownership after Andy's left, and then, yeah, about two and a half total.
And so I guess you're at a point now where you know the business well enough that you're comfortable making that sort of decision now. So it's actually, I guess, been a nice way to dip your toe in.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, and we eased into it.
Yeah, I don't think without doing that 25% to begin with, there's no way we would have taken on 100%. But one of our friends said a good thing to us when we were considering whether to go all the way in or not. He's like, well, it's kind of like you're 25% married to the business. Like, what's the difference between 25 and 100? I'm like, good point. We're already like going to be in it for, you know, at least probably 5-10 years anyway. So why not go all in? And then now that we do have, although a lot more responsibility and a lot more loan repayments, we do have a lot more control on where that can go and being able to have fun with that and see it grow, which is cool.
But like, it also does sound like a very good deal for the original owners as well. You know, they haven't had to put the business to market and all that sort of stuff
as well.
So they've actually, you know, that's worked out nicely for them.
Yeah.
How did you guys do, you know, your due diligence on the business? You know, were you guys comfortable? I mean, obviously there's a bit of accounting interest here. You know, how did you find that process?
So we had two different accounting firms do a financial evaluation of it. Evaluation. And with that, we kind of all then agreed on, you know, how much the business is worth.
Pretty hard to figure that out.
Yeah.
It's very subjective. So we all just kind of did our best and then agreed on it.
Yeah. We found a nice number, settled on that. And yeah, it was nice knowing though that when we are doing the vendor finance, that the interest does go to them.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel like as, you know.
Yeah, if there's a little bit more being paid out to them, we are more than happy for that. So yeah, it is nice with the vendor finance to see that interest go to them rather than an imaginary corporation.
And it's nice for them to see us running it, who we have been in the business for 6 years now.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time that we have been able to, you know, see the business grow. And you know, I would always, as an employee, see the back end of how everything worked anyway. So the due diligence was done definitely over time, and I didn't feel like there was any, you know, surprises in the bushes waiting to pounce or anything, and there hasn't been. So,
and credit to Andy and Ella as well. They're both very upfront, very honest people. And, you know, I don't think it was just nice. Like, I felt that confidence that all of us, none of us were trying to take each other for a ride. We're just trying to work out the best we can and move forward. And yeah, it has been that level of confidence with it, which is nice.
Just trying to be fair.
That's literally it. Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess they'd be happy too to see, you know, what they created live on and, you know, I guess almost have a second life.
That's it. Yeah.
Of you guys bringing your own vision into it. Do they sort of still you know, keep an eye on how it's running?
Or? They both still have keys. They come in whenever they want to use laser cutters and stuff like that, which is nice.
That's cool.
Yeah, and if we ever have any issues, we can just ask them as well.
Yeah,
which is nice.
They can still help you out.
Yeah,
because yeah, that's a totally different experience of yeah, going down that path and taking something over. But then, you know, it sounds like you guys are at a point now where you're ready to start reshaping and I guess aiming the trajectory of the business, you know, in a way that resonates with you guys.
Totally. Yeah, we want to respect what's been built and how it is, because, you know, we understand that it's gotten to where it is because of that consistency and being quite a steady business and focusing on some core skills. So we're very like conscious of that, making sure that we don't just come in and try and go 16 different ways with it. But we can also complement the business by adding in some other elements that we have been working on. Some of those might be recycling some of the offcuts from the acrylic and making furniture with them or something like that. Some others is, you know, the teaching side, of course. We can just kind of like group that in and have that as a complimentary service or a complimentary offering that is running alongside that for people who want to get into it but don't quite know how.
Because I guess that was going to be my next question is, yeah, what's the forward trajectory? You know, you've sort of given some brief timelines, but what would you imagine that it looks like in 10 years from now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm not too sure where it's going to look like in 10 years, probably 5 years. We'll have educated a lot more artists around the world to turn their either digital art or their traditional art forms into wearable art. So the earrings and brooches and necklaces. But yeah, 10 years time, who knows? Because a lot of people are buying their own laser cutters now. They've come down in price a lot, which makes it a lot more accessible. So do we shift into educating people how to use their laser cutters? And we've already started running some workshops on that and, you know, teaching people who could be our competitor. And that's actually been quite humbling and nice knowing that, you know, we're not the only one in the playing field now. And yeah, so educating people in general has been the forefront.
Definitely community over competition. And as you said before, that's kind of been at the core of all the things that we've always tried to do. So that's a big part of it for us. We don't have the energy to be someone's big competitor. We just like, can we help you out? Cool. Can you help us out? Cool. Are we both doing the same thing in our own little line? That's fine too.
You find your own tribe, don't you?
That's it.
And it was something I used to worry about. You know, I have a marketing business. I reckon there's about 10,000 marketing businesses
on the street,
mate, in Southeast Queensland, because like there's no barrier to entry. If you've got a laptop and a connection to the internet, you know, you can effectively do what we do. And it used to like stress us out back in the old days, you know, sort of thinking we're competing with these, you know, big agencies, small agencies, everything in between. And we realized that it actually doesn't matter. There's actually enough out there for everybody. Just stick to the bit that you like and people will come to you for that bit. Mm. And we've even got to the point now where we actually hand stuff over to other agencies because we're like, we actually don't really dig that. Like,
I really appreciate that.
Yeah
that's like good. That part, for your own sake and for the client as well.
Yeah, because we're like, look, that part of it, like we can do it, but we don't really like it. Just go to them. Like,
and as you start doing more of that work, you attract more work that you don't want to do. So put out the work that you want to do and you'll get more of that.
And we're also having a crazy experience at the moment where we've actually been turning work away.
I love that. Yeah.
And like I'm 15 years into this and like, you know, I would be on bended knee, you know, cutting costs and, you know, if you've got $2, I'll stretch that and make it look like it's $5. And, you know, like we would take on anything, you know, it really didn't matter what it was. We're like, yep, we'll figure it out. And never in our working life have we actually said to people, oh, look, you know, respectfully, you know, we don't have capacity. We probably, you know, I don't know if the alignment's there. I don't think that this will work for us. But then people keep coming back and going, will you work? And we're like, no, I'm really struggling with this at the moment.
That's funny.
Because like I've
it's
never
a good problem to have though.
I've never told people no. And like they're coming back and going, please. I'm like, still no.
Yeah, we've got that a bit with the design side for laser cutting. Not so much the like teaching people, but for people just saying, I don't want to bloody learn it, just do it for me.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, like the amount of effort that takes to take on a client when we're not doing that service, it is a lot. But the best thing that we found that you can do at least is to refer someone who is appropriate for that, because you're still helping, you're still being a part of that journey, and you're still going to be a reliable source of information for that person.
Totally.
And then in the future, maybe they'll come to you and say, actually, now I got this project. And you're like, that's perfect.
That's the
I can't wait to do
you're
it.
Like,
yeah.
That's my jam. That's like, it. That's the stuff that lights me up. That's the stuff I get out of bed early for. and I think I've just got to the point, and maybe it's just because I'm old and tired, that that's what I want, is I want to work on stuff where like I jump out of bed in the morning. And I'm like, hell yeah. Like even like these podcast days, I get up and I'm like, hell yeah.
That's
like,
awesome.
I can't wait to like come and chat and find out stuff about people that I didn't know. Like that's, and I think that that's something that, that is worth, you know, people considering in their own day to day.
Yeah. Big time.
And sort of going like, if it sucks and like, if it just always sucks, you're probably going to have a look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's usually a few things you can do to change that around without having to go all the way as well. You know, maybe it is just using your weekends a bit better, or your nighttime, you know, evenings a bit better, or something like that.
Just or putting something fun at the start of the day, which is my favorite thing, is to meet up with someone for coffee or something at the start of the day, so that I get into it and I'm really excited for it. And then, you know, all the hard stuff that you thought the night before are going to be hard, they're probably not as hard once you've, you know, done something you enjoy first up
and had a couple of coffees.
Always helps.
It's that good energy, isn't it? And that's part of, this is actually part of the art of being self-employed, is you've got nobody, like there's no big stick coming to give you a whack if you don't do the job, and if you don't get up, and if you don't deliver.
Yep.
Like that's on you. And that's actually probably one of the harder things of, you know, the life of self-employment.
It is, because that inner voice of do more is relentless, but it also is your own voice, so you can also say shut up.
Yeah, give it a hot minute.
Yep.
Now, again, I'm conscious of your time. I don't want to keep you here too much longer, because I know that it's mate, those lasers aren't going to cut by themselves.
Well, they are now. So
oh,
the staff are cutting away. Cutting, so it's all good.
6 a.m.
Six a.m.
Look at them go.
6 till 6 every day.
If people want to find out more about what you do, if they're interested in, you know, making jewelry or design or laser cutting acrylic, how can they follow you guys and your adventures?
So for the learning laser cutting design, it's laser with a Z design school, and on Instagram or searching Google. And then for the slow car meets, it's Geo Tokyo. And for laser cutting, it's Vector Etch. And
yeah. That's probably the best ways to find us, but send us a message on any of those, Instagram, Facebook, email, whatever you like, and you can find us there.
Man, I think we need to bring back the fax machine.
I think so too, actually.
Just one fax number. Awesome.
Awesome. Just like just I us. Kinda,
yeah, like
we have a fax our, and this
and
message.
We'll put a fax in and then just fax each other.
In like 10 years, we'll move to like pages.
Yeah. That would actually be sweet. What I'll do is I'll put a list of all the links where you can find Alex and Tyler all around the internet, where you can find them, Instagram, business, all the good things, so that you can jump in and have a look at the wonderful things they do.
Appreciate it.
Because they're here in Brisbane, so Yerongpilly.
Yep. Is, just down the road from here, which is nice.
Yeah.
I appreciate having Scott nearby. It's good.
Well, that's it. They get to drive through this loud intersection that we sit next to doing this podcast.
Maybe even break down in the middle of it.
Oh, hey. It happens to the best of us. Well, guys, look, thank you for taking the time to hang out and chat with us this morning.
Our pleasure. Thank you so
really
much for having us.
Do appreciate it. And, look forward to following the next adventure.
Yeah, and we look forward to following the podcast.
Oh, mate. And on that note, I am going to use my outro music made by my buddy Matt McCamley. Catch you next time.